The humble nucleus of Singapore's food culture are hawker centers. Imagine open-air food courts with small stalls, each selling only a handful of dishes. Most of them sell local fare, pratas with fish head curry, minced pork noodles, rice with roasted meats. The list could go on, but Singaporean food culture is difficult to contain in a description since it is the result of several Asian ethnic cuisines evolving and fusing throughout the young country's history. However, the hawker center is seen as the universal symbol for it all. Hawker centers form the everyday ambiance of Singaporean life. They're for hungry students after they finish school, office workers wanting coffee before their shift, and lone individuals waiting in line for a cheap meal while scrolling on their phones. Most Singaporeans live in government housing developments that have been carefully planned such that a hawker center would always be in the vicinity. The idea was that people needed hot, affordable food, but they also needed a communal nexus point. Hawker culture is so synonymous and integral to local heritage that it gained the UNESCO status in 2020. But like so many fragile food cultures, the hawker culture is in crisis, and automation may be in its future. The problem is not about demand. Singaporeans deeply treasure and consume their local cuisine. But as Singapore has rapidly developed, more and more people are getting educated and ascending the socioeconomic ladder. And the work of being a hawker, the person cooking the food in a cramped and hot stall, is stigmatized as underpaid blue-collar work. Many young people just aren't willing to sacrifice what could be comfortable middle-class lives for the hard slog of being a hawker. Profit margins are also increasingly slim. Despite government subsidies that have alleviated some of the economic pressures, real estate is expensive, and Singaporeans, despite growing wages, are resistant to paying more for local dishes, even in the context of a heritage conservation crisis. People accustomed to paying, let's say, 4 Singaporean dollars for a bowl of noodles, but they would pay $12 to $15 for a bowl of ramen at the shopping center, says Dr. Leslie Tay. He's a family doctor with a passion for food. Acting as a culinary advocate, he's worked with the Singaporean government to sustain the hawker trade. People's internalized notions about the value of food is reflected in hawker centers themselves. The rare food stalls that sell exotic Japanese, Korean, and Western dishes will be priced from 50 to 100% higher than their local counterparts. Numerous private and public attempts have been made to save the slowly atrophying hawker culture. Enter Hawkey in 2019. Hawkey was quote-unquote Singapore's first robotic restaurant, which had an almost fully automated cooking process. Human labor was still needed to slot in ingredients, but then they'd be cooked in spinning heated metal drums coated with oil. The founder of the company behind the robots, called Epic Food and Beverage, said he wanted to quote-unquote use robotic cooking and artificial intelligence to preserve the art of hawker culture and uphold the recipe. But what is the meaning of preserving a food culture without that knowledge being embodied in human hands? Dr. Tay was at the opening of the Hawkey restaurant before it closed soon after in the same year, partially because it failed to attract a sustained customer base after the initial novelty wore off. He says that food isn't easily automated. Robots don't understand what they do, they don't taste. Automation will be able to solve some of the manpower issues, he says, and certain things like slicing things or chopping things are easily solved by automation. That's why the government is already providing incentives for people to buy machines if they're hawkers, he says. But there's only a certain level of things that machines can do. But in other countries, automation seems to have been far more successful. Dibyananda Brahma is the vice president of Mukunda Foods, a company that started out as a single eatery in Chennai selling South Indian street food, idlis, dosas, paratas, and the like. They franchised that eatery, opening up 5 outlets, and it's one of the only business models that can ensure profitable margins that support a comfortable living. He says that when they were trying to expand, that's when they start seeing issues because it was becoming very difficult for them to deliver the same kind of quality and food across other outlets. Unlike Singapore, India does not have a labor availability problem, but there are issues in retaining workers after they have been uniquely trained in a business's recipes and techniques. Quality consistency was then a problem across multiple outlets. Combined with pressures of low profit margins and high rent, the founders turned to automation. Being engineers, the founders created the Dosomatic. It's a small tabletop robot with compartments for pouring in batter, oil, and water. The robot spreads the batter in thin layers on a heated cooktop, making crispy dosas each time. Many aspects of the machine can be customized: the recipe of the batter, the thickness of the dosa, its size, and cook time. The vice president tells me that the customization ensures the personality in street food is retained. He says, "How do I ensure that tradition, that culture, continues? If there aren't enough people getting trained, the best way to preserve those things are in a machine. After all, automation is far from alien to the food industry. Pizza sauce dispensers and automatic fryers have long been used in fast food industries. But what does it mean for the same social and economic stress factors that necessitate automation in fast food also endanger large parts of non-Western food culture?" He says that technology doesn't replace people, that's not what it does. It empowers people to do better than what they are currently doing. In Singapore, losing hawker stalls would mean much more than losing access to affordable local food. Food is a social nucleus around which important relationships and feelings of belonging are formed. I remember that I used to get math tuition every Thursday in a shopping center as a child. Afterwards, I would wait to be picked up in a nearby food stall that sold Hainanese chicken rice. The stall owners were an older couple, and they would look after me until my caretaker came and we'd buy a takeaway packet of that poached chicken and seasoned rice before we left. While I waited, I spent the time filling out empty lottery tickets and eating cucumber slices. I was a lonely child, but I felt like I was part of their family. I stopped getting tutored in math, so there really wasn't a reason to return. But when I finally did go back years later while attending university, I saw that the stall was still there. The couple looked much older, with the wife still wrapping the food while the husband cleaved the chicken into pieces. And the husband saw me loitering nearby. I was hesitating. He looked at me and said, "Mei Mei Zhang Da Le." The little girl has grown up.